Cass in Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are keeping calm. We are staying local. And thankfully for me, I have adults in the room. County Executive Don Moeller is keeping me in line with all things Baltimore Positive. Don, we can't be together. This is, I mean, no chicken and waffles. I know you can get a little carry out over at the State Fair. You can do a little drive-by, curbside, like a little walk for you on a nice day in Catonsville. But we are in pandemic times, and we're going to do this remotely for as long as we need to get the country back on its feet, right?
A little distance learning as part of Baltimore Positive. Always start, Nestor, by, before we welcome our guests, start by thanking all of our sponsors. You mentioned State Fair, Fabies. These folks are hurting right now. Order crab cakes from Fabies. They'll send them all over the country. State Fair doing a great job from brunch, lunch, all the way up through dinner. And we thank our newest sponsor at Moeller & Gary Realtors, Jeff Moeller. They're still up and running. They're doing real estate remotely. So if you're getting ready to buy or sell, give Jeff a call at 410-746-1547. Nestor, you've met our guest today, Tim Bojanowski, the president of Zest Media Solutions.
Tim, what's going on, man? Welcome in. Happy days on an unhappy day. We're all home. We're all trying to figure this out. And I think for all of us, this has created we were forced to think about new ways to look at things. And I know you're a guy that right on the front of LinkedIn, it says there's another way. There's always another way, but we don't find it until sometimes we have to go look for it. And the pandemic has certainly made all of us, whether it's our family, our loved one, our business, our community, sort of scramble a little bit and start asking questions. And I don't know that that's a bad thing, right?
No, I think you're exactly right. And obviously, I think everybody agree that we're in kind of dark times, but, you know, I'm staring out the window and it's beautiful outside. And I think what you're seeing is, like Baltimore tends to too, the people who truly do want to make an impact, really trying to rally in each way that they can, be it, you know, guys like you and Don, who are doing everything in their power to get the communications out there to help so many of these small businesses, or, you know, the people who are truly on the front lines in healthcare and our truck drivers and elsewhere. And certainly pretty inspiring to see, you know, both the government workers who are really trying their hardest to figure this whole thing out, and the private sector as they've rallied to, you know, oftentimes take up the cause of people who in other times might be considered competitors. So it's certainly a fascinating time. And like you said, I think that this is one of those critical moments where as a community, we look for those other ways.
Tim, you are connected in a unique way, and full disclosure, I love Zest Media Solutions. You guys are the ones that got my website and got my blog up and running, lickety-split.
I was trying to put Moeller out on the porch for a long time. You finally did it, Tim.
There you go. Zest Media Solutions got me to the front porch. But you are in a unique, to me, you have a unique perspective in a couple of ways. One, you are a small business like Nestor. You guys are kindred spirits in that way. So this is hitting you directly, and you also, because of the nature of your business, you are literally interacting with small businesses all over the United States. Give our listeners a sense, Tim, of the impact that this is having, not only for your business, but for all of the businesses that you deal with and interact with each and every day.
Yeah, I said something to a friend who's in the healthcare side of it on the golf course about 2 weeks ago, I guess, before it really had started to set in. And even at that point, you know, as he was talking about expectations for the infection rate and certainly, you know, the sheer numbers of people who might be impacted, I kind of just paused for a second, and not to say that it was in any way, shape, or form to diminish how big those numbers are, but at the moment where the first cases were hitting, you know, when that first announcement of schools shutting was there, at that very moment, 100% of businesses in the United States of America had been infected by this virus. 100% of businesses in Baltimore were already, and are certainly now, working to understand the cascading effect of how their supply lines are going to change, how they're going to be able to interact with their actual employees. For the employers trying to figure out, you know, from an accounting perspective and a finance perspective, really what this new normal will look like. And it's certainly been something that I don't think people will be able to truly gauge the true impact on until they're writing about it in history books, you know, years from now. But what I can say right now is that businesses are going to have to very quickly come to grips with thinking about other ways to operate. And the people who are supporting those businesses need to reconsider what becomes kind of the B2B markets and the B2C markets, business to business and business to consumer, just because what we're starting to see, like your restaurant friends, is how interconnected we truly are. You know, the economy is a living, breathing organism, and the fatality rate that's going to hit businesses is going to dwarf by large margins that of the medical fatality rate, even in the worst case scenarios. And that's not to say that it's not, you know, a very serious issue in that sense. But, you know, what we're looking
You're
at
talking
right
about
now,
millions of businesses are going to shut in this
Millions
game,
of businesses.
In this,
I
in
mean,
this
there
country.
Are people... There are people in large numbers who have already walked out of their doors for the last time, whether they've been laid off or not. And those numbers will continue to expand.
And those jobs won't come back. Not in that way.
They're not going to come back in that way. They're going to come back in other ways. This is the fascinating part of the free market, in that sometimes the darkest of times can provide corrections. And it's not to say that these people who are out of work, it was the correct thing for them to be out of work, but it's going to kind of recreate some of that infrastructure. But that still leaves us in this very gray area in the interim. And I'll use an example just because I know a lot of the sponsors for the show are restaurants. On average, 75, I believe the number from the American Restaurant Association, 76%, of all services are done in the restaurant, right? So that's people who are going in, they're sitting down and they're dining. The support from what becomes then liquor sales, food and beverage, or the beverage sales and other functions of it being such a large driver of what ends up showing up on that profit and loss sheet for these businesses. Well, those guys have different relationships than do grocery stores in terms of how they get their food and their produce, their meat, their dry goods, their liquids. It's a completely different subset of the economy, and they're typically dealing with large produce and dry good and meat providers who don't deal with the grocery stores. They're selling directly into restaurants. They're selling directly into hotels, into schools, into other institutions that have cafeterias. And those folks, if you think about the amount of times that we're eating in our home versus outside of our homes, are supporting what is a significant portion of that workflow for that part of the supply line. And so if a restaurant's cut down to 25% of their inventory, well, just think about the amount of people that restaurant serves that now have to find someplace else. That has already had a direct impact on some of the biggest produce providers and other forms of providers, seafood, the actual meat, all throughout the state. And so we have
all of it's perishable as well, right? So whoever the buyer is, they're guessing at this point, especially today, moving forward the next 2 weeks. How much fish can I sell? How many heads of lettuce can I sell? Should I bring strawberries in, right? Literally.
Yeah, and they're on a ticking time bomb because they know that what they have, you know, can go bad, and then, you know, it's something that comes at a complete loss to them. And the same decisions are being made by the people who are putting those things into their restaurants. The produce companies that have to employ people to drive the truck, they have to employ people to work in the warehouse, they have to employ people to put it into packaging to get there. I have a relationship that said, that's one of the largest providers for this in the state of Maryland, they laid off 300 people on this past Friday, and they didn't have a decision to matter, but that takes them down to 15% capacity to be able to operate as they would normally. Which means for all of the different places that would otherwise get this food, they're only going to be getting 15% of that workforce and 15% of that supplies. So what that does in the supply and demand line is shift so much of that responsibility to grocery stores, which is why right now it's so important for guys like you guys to help communicate out into the community, we have to keep these restaurants going. And that's why some of the communications at the state level have been so adamant to say, takeout's not going away, curbside's not going away, delivery's not going away. Because what will happen as these supply lines continue to get disrupted is continue to pile up on the lines at the grocery stores. And now you're going to have even longer lines, making more panic purchasing, sometimes, you know, chaos in terms of the management of it, and breaking all the guidelines we're trying to set out there to keep people healthy, because they're going to be piling up on top of each other. This isn't doomsday scenario. This is now just basic math. And so that's where, you know, the importance for people to try to communicate that they need to be thinking about, this is not a hyperbole, 99% of all businesses in America, 99% are small businesses. And these guys who, like a lot of people said, they're the ones who, you know, are employing your neighbors. They're the ones who are sending their kids to our schools. We got to have their back right now.
Well, Tim, again, appreciate that overview. And again, for folks just tuning in, you're listening to Tim Bojanowski, president of Zest Media Solutions, based in Towson, Maryland. Tim's also on the board of Towson Chamber of Commerce, as well as the president of the Baltimore County Public School Foundation. So, Tim, thanks for all your volunteer work. You, when you lay out that the ticking time bomb, as Nestor said, trying to figure out this food supply issue, I know the private sector is stepping up. You've been in the forefront of that. I know recently you've reached out to Baltimore County Council members, for example. Talk a little bit about the role of the private sector and what you all are trying to do to ensure that there will be perishable goods available to citizens throughout the region.
Sure. So this is something that I think we're going to continue to hear more about really across the country. And, you know, the challenge is, like us, everybody is literally inventing this, you know, as we go. This is a plane that's being assembled on the runway. But there are a lot of really capable people who are being put on the sidelines right now who are, you know, like me, just trying to help and to provide ways, you know, to support it as a volunteer. My business is, you know, classified as an essential business. A lot of these guys who in some way, shape, or form are kind of in the supply chain are not. So what we realized is that there was going to be a whole host of people who are really good at what they do who are not going to be doing it. And if we can keep them active, if we can try to figure out ways to get them to lend the support either of their businesses or just of their, you know, professional skill sets, and engage in that sooner rather than later, we'll be able to more significantly reduce some of these scarcity challenges that, again, it's just basic math. It's coming. And we need to be able to keep ahead of it at a community level.
I've walked into a bunch of supermarkets, you know, over the last 2 weeks like everyone else. And sometimes you go in and there's a lot of stuff. Sometimes there's not a lot of stuff. It's as a 50, almost 52-year-old person, and Don, maybe you could speak to this, being a few months older than me, it's disconcerting, right? I mean, you walk in and you're and now the masks are out and the rubber gloves. And again, my wife and I were built for this, right? My wife's had cancer twice. She spent 155 nights at the hospital. That's 155 days of my life that I had gloves and masks and all that. It was always awkward. It was never normal. It became something of a new normal. I'm wondering how we're going to keep people alive. You mentioned keeping these restaurants and stuff. I wonder at what point we really are being unsafe. I mean, I saw a kid at the supermarket the other day handing me receipts. No gloves, no masks, no anything. That's going to stop in 10 days, right? Like, over the next 10 days, you're not going to go out of the house without a mask. You know how I know this? I have friends in Northern Italy. I've been watching it for the last month.
Yeah, and so that's kind of, again, I'm not qualified to be talking about this issue at a medical level. I'm not qualified to be talking about this issue at a true government level. But at a common sense level, and understanding how the market works, a significant portion of the market that is there to provide utility to folks in these types of ways is not going to be there maybe tomorrow, let alone at the end of the week. And the grocery stores and a lot of these places where we're saying, like, this is essential, that's where you're going to go, Home Depot, you know, Walmart. You can see their press releases that are out there. They're begging for help, and they're also communicating as hard as they can with their vendors to say, please, just stay with us. Like, we can keep doing this. The challenge is the economy is a cascading effect that eventually gets to small businesses. And so what we're working on right now is trying to enlist the support of people who are already in a better position to organize, to get communications out there and help us to arrange what we're referring in a soft sense as pop-up markets. So this would be using B2B relationships. As an example, the produce company that I was describing, what you would pay for their goods at a 15 or 20 pound box in a grocery store is 10 to 12 times what they can actually provide it for in the way that they normally do. The difference in the economy is there's lots of other people who are working to make their businesses work on profit margins inside that supply chain. Well, just by the nature of this pandemic, they've already been cut out. And so this isn't to cut these folks out permanently. It's just to try to make the resources that they provide available to the community as soon as we can.
Because that storefront's closed, literally, right?
Right. It's literally not there. And that's that's the beauty of the fair market. It's a deal. We depend on them. They depend on us. And that's the kind of the working arrangement that we have in this thing called America. But right now, we're not going to have that. And so we have to figure out what else is there. And we also know that the government is working incredibly hard to create these resources. But their first priority has to be, and this isn't to fault them, it has to be the most socioeconomically challenged parts of the population. And they're doing a really good job with this. The people who are normally dependent on food support, either from charities or from the government, they're getting their food. The challenge is that number is about to skyrocket, right? And this is just a basic
30% unemployment, right? Then people can't afford food even if they could find it.
So these lines are going to get longer, and the resources for these groups, the churches are already begging for food. The food banks are begging for food. And to the same things that you're describing, they're not prepared to have people who are untrained putting their hands into these things, being sanitary, organizing them in a way. That's what the professionals do, right? That's what restaurants do. That's what these produce companies do. So we're just trying to connect these resources in a way that, you know, right now the plan being to lean on commercial property owners, to lean on nonprofits like churches, hopefully to lean on local school systems and otherwise, to be able to have scheduled pop-up markets, that there's a digital resource that we've already built that people can go on to make reservations for what become basically weekly meal kits or weekly or monthly supply kits, so that instead of having to go into those lines and maybe not even get what they're hoping to get in terms of produce or dry goods or milk, whatever it might be, make those orders and have an understanding that they can go to, you know, a place that might be right down the street. It could be on their street, and have these distributed through a volunteer network. And so this is something that I think, you know, we're probably a little bit ahead of the conversation on across the country, but that's just because I think, like we talked about, the ticking time bomb got set here in Maryland a bit more quickly. We were one of the first states to start putting restrictions on the businesses, so you start seeing those disruptions happen more quickly. As every other state in the union starts to experience these disruptions into the supply chain, they're going to have to figure out ways to make things available down the street from people. And sometimes, you know, the Mars supermarket or whatever it is, isn't down the street from people. And it's not something that we want them to be going out in bulk, especially as more and more of the population may unfortunately become infected by this. So the idea right now is to create a network of volunteers who can help either through their professional skill set or literally just being able to be there to lift a 15 or 20 pound box and load it up into somebody's car, so that they don't have to have people, you know, sorting through food with their bare hands, so they don't have to be exchanging credit cards and cash.
Tim, when would you hope? I mean, great work. First of all, shout out to you. Kudos to you. I know that was your firm stepped up, worked on the website, worked on the digital side of this operation, so folks would be able to find out where these markets were, sign up. When would you hope operationally that folks might actually begin to see these markets popping up in their neighborhoods?
So we actually have a commitment from the provider to float the produce. So, you know, again, this is the side of it where, you know, at this point, until we're set up with a fund and there's donations in place to purchase it, people still need to buy the food. You know, it's just that we're hoping to be able to provide it at, you know, a tenth of the cost that they would get, especially as we start worrying about inflation that could make, you know, a gallon of milk go to $12. So the tool's set up, and the produce company has actually began the preparation for these so they could put together somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 orders. This week, we will be making that information public. And these pop-up markets, as soon as we have the commitments from the volunteers as well as from the property owners to say that we can go on their parking lots, will be made available on a Tuesday, Thursday, or Saturday immediately thereafter, which is when the produce company's trucks can go after. We're talking with the Department of Agriculture, who's got a whole network of farmers markets that won't open this year.
That's unbelievable, right? Like, just on a side, my wife and I go to the farmers market every Sunday that we can, which I would say in 30 weeks, we go to the farmers market 27 out of 30 weeks, right? And we're thinking like, man, what these people are growing that lettuce. They're growing the agriberries, growing those incredible berries that they have. How are we going to have access to those in the coming weeks?
Yeah, and that's what the farmers are grappling with too. I mean, these are people who, that's one of the significant, you know, profit sources for them.
Of course.
In an otherwise very contained, not very high margin ability to make a living. And they're the ones who are in our own backyard. You know, so as you start seeing regional collective bargaining break down, and you get to very competitive bargaining where it's saying, hey, we need this gallon of milk. We can pay $14 for it, and we're going to make a 5% profit on it. That's how inflation happens. That's where the biggest socioeconomic struggles of the Great Depression occurred, was when that scarcity happened and inflation occurred. So we have to get to these groups and help them to continue doing their parts of their business. And that's going to require new resources. But the beautiful thing of right now is that we live in a generation of innovation, and we have the ability to connect people like no other time in human history. And we have the ability to fulfill commerce like no other time in human history. So we've built out a pretty comprehensive tool that we hope to release. We're just working on continuing to secure these partnerships. And to the extent that we can work with people, you know, both in government and in the charity sector, to just point people to what's already there, the key is working together. And in times of crisis, there's a tremendous urgency, which sometimes make people start working in the fastest way that they can or in the only way that they know how. And sometimes it means that we have to kind of cross into, you know, again, another way to do these things to make sure that to the extent humanly possible, we are being as practical with the resources that are out there and not duplicating or exhausting efforts, because it's going to require everybody who can.
Nestor, another great story. You're determined to shine a light on all that's happening out there, all these small businesses. This is another great example of a small business stepping up, not only for themselves, but for others. Tim, before we let you get away, we're not going to let you get away without giving us a little commercial for Zest Media Solutions. I mean, you guys are a dynamic company. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, I see this big lemon up here, dude, right?
Yeah, well, what I just found out is that we are essential, you know, so I'll start off by saying we are an essential company. But, you know, we're just people, man. So we tend to consider ourselves just kind of that next generation of the professionals that everybody's going to sometimes need. So everybody has their lawyer, their insurance guy, their banker. We fit that category where it's digital. So most of our clients, they're small businesses, and they're leaning on us to be the know-how and the legwork to help in sometimes times like this, where they've got to suddenly convert all of their business to their website. But hopefully more often when they're really just trying to get information about what they do out there and tell their story and let, you know, good people know how good they are at what they do. So
break that down a little more. If I'm out there in my car right now and I'm starting a small business, or I'm thinking about a small business, or I'm thinking I've got to do something else with my website, you guys are a one-stop shop, right, for digital communication.
Yeah.
Tell us, yeah, what's
that look business
like
out there in the modern, you know, storefront that used to be that, you know, you'd run a shop or an office building, you'd hang a shingle, put a sign out there, and then people would come inside. You know, that doesn't happen quite like that anymore. So we start from the ground up in terms of helping people to, you know, create their brand and understanding what that business is going to look like. Then to building the actual, you know, digital tools, including the website, the social media, helping them to understand how do they push messages out there, how do they do advertising, how do they measure what's coming in, helping to create the creative resources so that, you know, if people are seeing it, you know, through video or through graphics that might be on a billboard, that it's all consistent. Our team kind of works as that external marketing department for organizations who, you know, they might need it in the same way that an enterprise level company like a, you know, an Under Armour or a Pepsi would, but it's just not going to ever be resources that they have internally. So we work as an extension of those companies' teams, really trying to embed ourselves as their team to handle everything that they need from, you know, a web development, digital media, graphic design, and consulting and management from a marketing perspective standpoint.
Where do they find you, Tim? They want to get more information. They want to get in touch. Where do they come get in touch with you?
You give us a Google. We have pretty good results. We know a thing or two about that whole Google machine. So if you Google Zest Social Media Solutions or visit us online at www.zestsms.com, you'll see a big lemon like Mr. Aparicio was just referring to.
And a good-looking crew here. You got to, you know, you have employees. I have employees. We're all you're trying to hold this thing together. Appreciate what you're doing out in the community. Just incredible education as far as what happens in pandemics down the line. We're all trying to see around the corner, around the bend. It's a lot easier to do when we're around smart people. I appreciate you, Tim. Thanks for coming on with us.
Tim, thanks,
of course,
Mike.
As a twice-over dropout, uneducated guy, I'm happy to provide any education anytime that I can.
Hey, be safe out there.
Hey, Tim, wisdom comes in all shapes and sizes. Look at me. I haven't shaved in a month. There he is. Tim Bojanowski, Zest Media Solutions. That's Zest SMS. And if you need to get in touch with him, you can find me. You can find Don. Doing the Baltimore positive thing, keeping calm, staying local, talking about how we're going to put all of this back together, and wash your hands. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore positive.